Welcome. You're listening to Evolver Planet Radio. What's up, Evolver Planet? That was a sample from Richard Ganaway's music, who will be joining us on the show tonight. Welcome to the show. I am your host, Jonah Bolt. And trying to get with this is Wendy Owens. We're having some technical difficulties. Her internet is acting a little funny, so hopefully she'll join us later on the show. Today is Friday, November 4th, 2011. And of course, remember, Evolver Planet Radio is brought to you in part by Helixelay.com, the new interactive Flower of Life board game. That's www.helixelay.com. And on the show tonight, we have some amazing guests. We have joining us as our music artist, Richard Ganaway from AOMusic.com. And the second half of the show, we have Barbara Alice Mann joining us, a professor and also the writer and multiple articles. One of the main ones we're focusing on will be the binary fractals of the gift economy. And also joining us a little before that will be David Beeler, the inventor of the Flower of Life board game. And as always, just to give updates really quickly on Occupy, which we've been covering and talking about, which will continue. It's a big thing. Check out OccupyTheNation.com. And joining us now, our first guest is Richard Ganaway. Richard, you there?
I can hear you.
Okay. First, want to go over a little bit about basically the history of your music, when you first got into your music, and how did you form the AOMusic.com?
AOMusic.com, yeah. Well, AO began about 15 years ago in 1996. My two partners, Jay Oliver and Miriam Stockley, hadn't met at that time. I knew Jay. Miriam was off in South Africa in the UK doing a project called Adiemus. And Jay and I had been in rock genres and pop genres, and at that time wanted to embark on something more world-esque. And I had something that involved children in my mind. Wasn't sure how it would manifest. I just knew I wanted to embark on it. And so we began experimenting with you know, good chord structures that were originally tended to be rock songs for Tiger and the Helix, a rock band that I had formed in the early 90s. And didn't really want to go back out on tour with that project and knew I needed to step into a new voice. So we began experimenting with different ethnic textures. At that time, there were sample libraries out there that could basically take you to just about any region in the world. That technology, of course, has gone forward by leaps and bounds, but back then, that's what we used to kind of expose ourselves. Since then, we've been to many of these places, and we're now on our third album. And awesome. It's a music that involves kind of a universal tapestry of textures and indigenous.
So you fuse together different cultures of music, basically.
Right. And at the time, we hadn't heard anything done like that. And there wasn't really a genre for us to neatly fit into by doing so. So it was somewhat risky in this business. You know, when you embark on new ground, you sort of take your career in your own hands. But it's very much recreated us in a very positive way since we've committed ourselves to this style of music making. And go ahead.
What would you call your genre of music?
It's very universal. You know, it's world, it's ethnic fusion, it's world beat, it's new age. It's got pop elements because that's where we all came from. Primarily, it is a universal blend of what would be considered roots music and contemporary elements. You know, we use very organic textures, and we also use a bit of electronica.
So it's a mixture of electronic, organic, and fusing it all together to create a world beat.
A world beat, yeah. And then we put children in as sort of a centerpiece to kind of glue it all together. And then Miriam Stockley with this quintessential sound that she has of kind of a South African children's choir, very dynamic.
Wow. Oh, that's awesome.
Kind of rounds the corners. Yeah, it's been wonderful for us.
Yeah, it's amazing hearing and listening to the children because you could feel the resonate with the purity and the tone, and it's very powerful. So that's awesome. And you also have AO, an international project that you're doing. Tell us about that.
AO Foundation International. That is something that is a way to take these places that we go to where we involve children from very small villages, sometimes very remote, very poor areas, and give back to them with some intellectual property. And at the same time, be a place where people can go and discover causes that are out there that are doing some very good work, that are very well put together, organized, efficient, and effective. Whereas typically it's hard to know what to fuel with your philanthropy money unless you've got somebody out there doing research for you. So we want that to be something we can offer since we go to these places and let the children kind of be the way in. In other words, they hear the music, they see the faces, and they get the spirit of what it is we're trying to convey. And it helps. It helps people kind of climb on board to this universal way of thinking. And we believe it can be quite effective as a model for entertainers everywhere to give back.
Absolutely. It definitely sounds like it has a good chance of doing that, especially with the organization that you formed and the backing behind it and just the getting the word out there. And in doing so, your music has even been scheduled and put on the ballot for a Grammy. Is that correct?
It is. This album is on the ballot in two categories, and hopefully by December we'll know if we're a nominee, which would just be wonderful.
Excellent. And this is your second time being on the ballot.
Right. We had an album in 2009, which was also a great journey for us. It involved kids from China and India, and I believe the opening track, Anjaya, was featured as something that we were asked to write as theme music for the 2008 Beijing Olympics. And that wow. really got us into that whole region of the world. And
amazing.
You know, once you've gone to places like that and met those people and discovered their music and where it comes from and the antiquity behind it, it's quite humbling. And, you know, to have that music make the ballot in 2009 was a great honor for us.
Wow, that's amazing. Yeah, I've been over to Asia and Thailand and Hong Kong and Malaysia, and the culture is so different. It really takes you to go there. You have to go there to experience that, because from what I experienced in Thailand specifically, it was just an amazing culture, and it was about the family and unity, and And it gives you a whole new perspective on things, especially being musically inclined like yourself to go out there and experience that culture and infuse it with your music, and being involved in the Olympics is quite amazing. So that's quite an amazing journey, to say the least, to be involved in something like that. And where can you find your music? You're on SoundCloud, or is it on your website?
Yeah, I mean, the typical places like Amazon and iTunes are the music can certainly be downloaded there, or you can order it direct at aomusic.com and several other places. You can listen to it on SoundCloud, and there are just numerous sites out there. But if you'd like to have the actual artifact of a CD, you know, you can go and make that happen, or typically people like to download a high-res version of an MP3.
Sure.
And we love it when they come to the site and order it direct, because then we can take those funds and take a percentage and donate them to the causes we align with.
Excellent. So the best way to get your music and also help make a difference would be through your website. That's aomusic.com.
Indeed.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Richard, so much for coming on Evolver Planet Radio, and good luck with the Grammy being nominated, being on the ballot, and we hope to have you back on the show soon.
Thank you, Jonah. Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
Awesome. I will talk to you soon, Richard. You have a great evening. And with that, we're going to listen to a little bit more of Richard Ganaway's music, and coming back after the break, we'll have David Beeler on the line.
And welcome back. That was some more music from Richard Ganaway's new album. And joining us now on the show is David Beeler, the inventor of the Flower of Life board game. David, you with us?
Hey, Jonah.
How you doing? Thank you for joining us on the show.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Awesome. Hey, David.
Hey, Wendy.
How are
first
you?
I'm good. Nice to finally meet you. Heard a lot about you.
Thanks for joining us tonight.
Good. You're welcome.
Okay, so
what do you want to talk about?
Yeah, tell us about the board game, the one that first came to you, and how it started.
Okay, so the Helixilei board game, that's spelled H-E-L-I-X-I-L-E-H, and that's the reflective quality of relationship. So the whole thing kind of came to me as a relationship tool to be able to convey my stories and give my full listening attention to my beloved stories. So basically a game to create greater levels of intimacy.
Wow.
And so, yeah, it's pretty cool. When I was playing it with my son, he's the one that turned to me and said, "This is a game." And I spend a lot of time playing games that are not so useful and certainly don't get to what's deep inside of us. So that's the intention here, is to find out what's really on our mind and where we're creating from. We have these reference points in the back of our subconscious mind that we consistently create our reality from. And the purpose of this tool is to uncover these, thus transform them, and give us the opportunity to create something new.
And why'd you pick the Flower of Life logo, sort of say, on the Board of Life game?
Just the nature of the Flower of Life symbology itself. It's all about intersections and connection. And I actually, through a deep meditation, I actually saw this image as the grid of consciousness itself, and saw the double strand helix woven through this, and realized that how we create our reality is through our perception. And I know that's a kind of a no-brainer. We all know that at this point. But this game, if you will, or tool, helps us to see what our own perception is and how we're creating, and what connections we not only have in our life, but what connections we desire in our life. And so it's a great networking tool, great for building community, great for problem solving within companies or within family dynamics. I've used it in counseling methods as well. It's quite an amazing tool that can be adapted to a lot of different scenarios.
That's awesome.
And so I actually saw the board game over at the Transition Asheville event. And so as far as like that day when you were showing people how to use it, what has been the input about the game thus far?
What has been the what?
The input.
Oh, the input from others on the game. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Everyone really loves it. The game nights that we have tend to go far past many people's bedtimes. it's the kind of game that I introduced it to a local university, and one of the gentlemen in this group said that he didn't want to stop playing. It was hard to get away from the game. And that's been my experience with all of the groups that I've played with is we get into this storytelling and allowing others to see us in our vulnerable state and, by conveying our perspectives and telling our stories about our lives. And through that, there's a sense of being heard, of being seen, you know, for who we really are. And, you know, because often in this culture, you know, you might be seen by the car you drive or the job you have. You know, at most social gatherings, the pat question is, you know, what do you do? Well, I don't want to know what you do. I want to know who you are. And so through the playing of this game, you can start to see who you are.
Oh, wow. That reveals a lot of information to the player or players.
Yes, Wendy. When you play it by yourself, you start to see how your own subconscious mind works. And when you play it with others, you start to see the networking, the commonalities that we share. And to answer your question again with, you know, the feedback I've been getting, a lot of people that have known each other for a year or two or even longer find out things about their friend that they would have never known. One particular game night, two of us found out some very revealing patterns about a dear friend of ours that has opened up a whole new level of compassion for, at least in my heart, for this individual, based on this understanding of his stories that are rippling out into his present-day life.
Wow. Hmm. Sounds like a very powerful tool.
Yeah,
There's also different designs for the game. You have different designs, the Seed of Life, chakras.
Oh, yeah, on the back of each game board, the front of the game board is the community game board, and you can use it for problem solving by yourself, and there's so many ways to play, and any of the listeners out there that do get a game, I would encourage you to go to the page and post any new ways that you have found to play, and that encouragement is also in the instructions. But yeah, the back sides of the boards, there's the Seed of Life, which is the self-reliant growth tool, a way of distilling your thoughts through allowing your subconscious mind to speak and then pausing at the spectrum of your subconscious mind speaking to consciously make decisions. So it kind of takes you into levels of your subconscious mind to where you add a little bit of conscious awareness at these different levels of the revealing of your subconscious mind. So that's really, in my opinion, the jewel of this, because when we understand our peace, who we really are, you know, our piece of the pie, our piece of the puzzle, then that's when we truly find our peace with the individuals in our life and our community and how to apply our gifts.
So this would be a really good game to bring on to an event or, like, say, something like a community event or building community, even like I think Jen and I are talking about, we're going to be representing this game for Evolver Asheville. So this would be a really good game for other Evolver groups and people that are trying to build community to get to know each other.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's an amazing networking tool for that simple fact of revealing, you know, who we are and thus what our gifts are and where we intersect. And, you know, I don't think that any one person has the line on truth. I think that through our communal birthing effort, if you will, that's when things really start to move. When we can come together and say, hey, you know, I've got this piece of the puzzle. What piece do you have, and does it intersect with my piece? And so I think we're really at the point of evolution where we realize that we can't do it alone. We need help. All of us need each other. Let's get together.
It's like having a well-oiled machine. You have many different components that make up this larger machine. And so you have to know which components do what and how they work where and the gears, how they turn. And so, yeah, I definitely can see this being an effective tool, and I can't wait until we actually get to use it. So if people want to find out more information about the game and how they can get the game, what do they need to do? Where do they need to go to check it out?
Okay, so you can go to my website, and that's helixlay.com, and that's spelled helixileh.com. And if you think about that name, it's helix spelled both ways at the intersection of the X. So where the X crosses is kind of representative of the intersections of the overlapping circles. So thus the name was born, Helixalay.
Would you even say that, because you said that you have a child that actually gave you the idea behind the game, that I guess this would be good for children too, and building group activities for children?
Oh, absolutely. I've done things at different festivals with sidewalk chalk that really engages the whole crowd, and especially the children. And the beauty of those experiences were that it put the children on a level playing ground with all of the adults. There was no perspective that was greater than another. And so these kids, they have this sense of empowerment when they step up and they're in a crowd of people. And they say, this is what this means to me. And they tell their little story, and all these ears are listening to them and valuing them as a valid human being. Yes, this is what we're doing here, is we're creating a level playing ground to where your perspective and my perspective are equal. You are not better than me, and I'm not better than you.
It could also be used for yourself to play, correct?
I'm sorry, would you say that again, Jonah?
You could also play yourself and learn stuff about your own subconscious mind.
Absolutely, yeah. The playing the seed of life, which is seven overlapping circles, and charting your words, there's an amazing way of distilling your thoughts. And There's also a humanistic aspect that I do workshops on and will be teaching people that are interested in transforming thought patterns. The instructions in the game board, I think they're pretty clear about that shamanistic expression, but it's been conveyed to me that the real power and juice in this is me actually teaching some aspect of thought distillation and working through this as your own personal shaman, to where you transform your own thoughts and use the energy behind them to create something new. And
wow.
I think we're all at that point where we want to create something new.
Yeah, definitely.
Absolutely.
You know, everything, yeah, just like right now in this country, there is a re-evolution happening. It's not a revolution, it's a re-evolution. We are evolving, so we want to create, and we are becoming new perspectives and new thoughts, and of course we've got a new consciousness that is definitely starting to be present in a lot of beings. So I don't think there's a better time for this game. So I'm very excited. I can't wait to play it. So definitely.
Yay!
Yeah, especially for the spiritual community and networking. That's a big thing with our community, is getting to know each other and playing that game. You really get to know inside that person's head what they're thinking, what some of their true feelings are in situations. When I played, it was nonstop listening to each people share and learning about that person. And to me, that was the most fun part about it, is you're learning about the other person you're with, not just playing a board game to play a game. You're playing it to learn about each other, and that's powerful.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I have learned so much, not only about the people I've played with, but I've increased my own range of thinking very often. I'll rephrase that. This tool and playing this with others has helped me to expand my own awareness around topics that I thought I knew the real deal about. But when other people start adding their perspective, kind of has opened me up to a greater reality.
That's what's up. And again, before we go, because we got to wrap this up, give us the website one more time where we could buy the game and find out more information.
Okay, it's helixileh.com. That's helixileh.com. And thank you both so much for having me.
Yeah, thank you for being with us tonight. And like I said, I can't wait to play the game. I'm definitely going to spread the word about this.
Yeah, thank you for your time, David, and we'll definitely be seeing you at the next Evolver meeting here in Nashville, and look forward to it.
Okay, well, thanks so much, and I'll see you soon.
Enjoy your night, and with that, we'll listen to a little more of Richard Ganaway's music. And welcome back. That was a sample from Richard Ganaway's music, which we had on the show a little earlier. And now we're going to get Barbara Alice Mann on the show, who has written a couple articles for RealitySandwich.com. And Barbara, are you with us?
Yes. Hi, Barbara. Okay. Welcome to Barbara Planet Radio. Thanks for joining us tonight.
Okay, first I'll just give a little background. You're an assistant professor at the Honors Department in the University of Toledo.
You're also
an associate lecturer in the English Department at the University of Toledo. And you also have a PhD in English Language and Literature from the University of Toledo. And you're also American Studies, and you're Master of Arts from the University of Toledo as well.
Mm-hmm.
I would go over your whole resume, but your resume
is... I'm sure they want you to know that.
Yeah, I'm looking up your resume. It's 12 pages long, so it takes some time to go over everything.
I guess. So, Barbara, let me ask you, there's a lot of change going on right now in this country, and the waves are being felt, and people are looking for answers, you know, because people are starting to occupy, and they're starting to put changes into place. And at least discuss, you know, what changes are needed. You've got some great ideas economically and shifting this energy. That's really what I wanted to ask you about, you know. How can you see that playing into Occupy, the Occupy movement?
How do I see what? You mean the gift economy?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, well, the gift economy is something that's been in existence for... millennia, you know, it's not some brand new idea, and I certainly did not invent it. It's been an operation in culture for a very long time. So, and it's still operative in many cultures around the world. It's just that most Americans and most Westerners have no idea about it because basically the West never looks to anybody else for ideas. It's always quite content to gaze at its own navel. In terms of the Occupy Wall Street movement, I think politically they're doing an important thing. I don't think they've got much organized thought going towards things like a new economy. It's more like a protest against what is. I don't see them hatching suggestions for what else to do. Is that what you were talking about?
Yes, ma'am. That's what I was talking about. I mean, you know, there's all this, you know, all this change that's happening. People are trying to change all these old school systematic approaches. So we've got to look at other aspects of change too, like shifting into a new economy, shifting into, you know, a new thought pattern of how we buy and sell, you know, and also realize that we can become, you know, more a bartering and trading society. We have an overexcess.
Well, why do you want to barter and trade? That's not a very good idea. Gift economy is not barter and it's not trade. It's just what it sounds like. It's gift.
And Barbara, tell us about your article, the binary fractals of the gift economy that you wrote for Reality Sandwich. Let's talk about that article and what that means.
Okay, well, basically, I suppose Western scholars may know the gift economy. Certainly French scholars have done a tremendous amount of work on it. Native Americans live in it, and people around the world actually have always had a gift economy. The capital economy is actually an outgrowth of the rating culture, the idea that I want what you have, and I'm going to bop you over the head and take it from you. Now, that gets refined along the way, you know, to pass laws against bopping people on the head. You're not supposed to do that. So the tactics get refined so that it's still your money or your life. You're just not supposed to notice that's happening. The idea is that one party still makes out better than the other party, even though the theory is there's an equal exchange going on. That's rating culture economics. You have to look at cultures that are not rating cultures to see a different concept of economics. By and large, and I come out of Native American culture, so I can talk about that. The idea is nurturance. Native American cultures, certainly in the eastern woodlands, are matriarchies. and we have a totally different approach to how things are done. First of all, nurturing is a basic idea, and the basic premise is taken from observing nature. And what you observe in nature is that Mother Earth is giving to her children, and by the way, that's not just human beings. Human beings are not the focal point of life. Mother Earth is giving to everybody at all times. So it's the impulse of a mother to give. Genevieve Baum has done a huge amount of work on this herself, and there are also others who have written extensively on the gift economy. It's not like it's something I invented in my bedroom one night. Yes? You there, or did I drive you away?
Yes. No, no.
I think we have a little bit of latency on our end.
Oh, okay.
And so what is it that you're doing to educate people about the gift economy and, like, bringing that on to the different forums like Evolver, Reality Sandwich, and what response are you getting from your teaching about the gift economy?
Well, I don't have teaching. I'm just telling you how the culture works. And it still is a feature of Native American culture, you know. Colonialism came in and disrupted as much as it could of traditional cultures, and that's true worldwide, not just here in the Americas. And so there's been a lot of damage done to the traditional gift economy principles. It's not a set of teachings. It's not like I'm some kind of evangelist out there talking to people, and I certainly hope that's not any kind of idea abroad. All I'm doing is explaining what the culture is and that there is a different set of principles that can be used to organize economics. The main principle comes from observing the interaction of the mother and child. And this intellectually has been worked out in great detail, as I said, by Genevieve Vaughan. So I'm certainly not trying to take credit for her method of explaining how this works. She's been working on this since the 1970s. So what else specifically did you want me to talk about?
Well, what got you into your specific research? I mean, when did you start reading and finding out about the gift economy? And what got
I've always known about it. I come from that.
Yes. So what was your experience with that?
Just that the brutal form of culture visited around the world by basically Western Europe is not the natural form of humanity or culture. You know, many people were colonized, taken over, and brutalized, but that doesn't mean that just because they were forced to bow to a certain amount of colonialism that they agreed with it, thought it was right, or really took it into their hearts. Certainly have not. And right now, indigenous people worldwide are trying to reassert their sovereignty. You know, our theory is we never relinquished sovereignty. We were held by a bunch of thugs for a fair amount of time, with guns to our head and told we had to do it or they're going to kill our children, and that happened. But that doesn't mean that we forgot the principles of our own culture, basic of which is you don't foul the nest. You don't foul and destroy the place where you live. You want that place to continue sustaining you. The idea is you give first. And the older you are, the more you give. The richest people in Native American cultures are the most important and the most venerated are never the ones with the most material possessions. Never. Because they're always giving it away.
Well, Barbara, isn't it ironic that, I mean, if you look at it, that this country was stolen and contaminated from indigenous people and from the Native Americans that were here, you know, and respected the balance, respected Mother Earth, and respected everything that that entailed, community. And I think in essence of all what's happening now, with these systems being ripped down, it's really ironic that all these lies are being exposed. This country was not founded on freedom, you know, and the whole system is coming down. So
it's founded on freedom for a bunch of rich guys and their slaves. That it was the freedom to not have to be ruled by England, but to set up their own colonial system.
In your book, right, George Washington's War on Native Americans?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, what I go into there is I just put forward all of the documents, and I talk about exactly what was done as opposed to the little stories, the little glorious stories. And there was a glorious aspect to the American Revolution. There were people who were trying to get out from under a heavy hand of England. They were along the eastern seaboard. But, you know, that war was actually fought on multiple fronts. And there was the war on the seaboard against the British, but the war in the West, the so-called West, and that's where George Washington put actually the majority of his attention. Certainly the biggest army he gathered was sent against the Iroquois in upstate New York. That war was against Native America. What most people don't realize, two of the big impeti for the American Revolution were that in 1772, the Mansfield Judgment came out of England outlawing the slave trade, and that was certainly in the hearts and minds of the southern planters who were joining the revolution. And also, Britain was forcing the enforcement of Fort Stanwyck's Treaty of 1768, which refused to allow the settlers to just go grab more Indian land. So you take those two conditions, you shake them up, and it's not just the Stamp Act that's getting people riled. It's the fact that they aren't supposed to have trade slaves and the fact that they aren't supposed to grab Indian land.
So are you saying, Barbara, that some of the stories they tell us in history of what we learn in school is not the real story?
Not the real story. No, not at all. Not at all. One of my favorite books is Lies My Teacher Told Me.
Yeah, and you've done several books, and you've also added to Daniel Pinchback and Ken Jordan's book for 2012. Tell us a little bit about that, the Blood and Breath.
I was just trying to write an awful lot of the misperceptions of the Native American perspective. You know, actually, we call ourselves Indians. It's academia that keeps forcing the term Native American. And Indian is actually no more a correct description than Native American, but most people, Indians, seem a little more comfortable with it. Anyway, the traditional view sees the world as interactive cosmic halves, so that you've got Earth, and that's one half, and you've got sky, which, by the way, means outer space, and that's the other half. And you don't have a whole until you've got those two cooperative halves working in harmony and in sync. This is the harmony way of the Cherokee. That's what they call it. And we've got, all of us have the idea of balance, and we just call it different things depending on which nation you're talking to at the time. You've got a different metaphor for it. But that's the basic idea, that you've got things that are happening here on Mother Earth, and then you've got spirits that belong to places in Mother Earth, and then you've got spirits that belong up in Brother Sky. And two of them need to be in harmony if you're going to go forward in any kind of a meaningful way. And I don't mean forward in a progress way. It's more like a continuous circle, like a dance in a circle.
Nice.
Well, you know, with everything coming down and, you know, people are looking for new answers and building new communities and everything, and hopefully there still will be some infrastructure and some goals that will be put into place that will be effective for the greater good of all.
Well, I hope it's not by getting a 501c3 and turning itself into the money engine as I hear is going on.
Yeah,
that's...
So,
yeah,
anything that you know, you want to add about anything at all, any of your books, any of your research?
Anything at all, eh? Oh, that's a dangerous question. You know, I'm actually like what Iceland did. When Iceland was facing this a year and a half ago, I forget how long ago, Iceland, they just let the damn banks fail. Too bad about the banks. And yeah, they're having a long, hard pull to pull themselves out. But they have started to organize and pull themselves back out. Now, there are only, you know, there aren't that many people living in Iceland. What, 100,000? I don't remember how many people live there. So it's a country the size of a Midland town from our perspective. But still, I think they had the right idea. Let the banks fail. Why is it our obligation to keep those guys going?
Well, when the system comes, I mean, the bankers, you know, I mean, the control that the banks have over this country anyway is just disgusting.
Well, all they've really got control over is money, so stop using it.
Yeah, I know. Well, I know a lot of people are talking about pulling their money out of the bank. Today was supposed to be the magical day. And, you know, the bank system, if people did start pulling their money out of the bank, there would probably be an immediate freeze on people's accounts because of all the power and control that money brings in the first place, and we let it happen. You know, dollar bills and human greed has just gotten us in this situation. And so, you know, we've got
to... Well, you know, human greed and all that kind of explanation, that's a very Christian explanation. I don't really have a lot of patience with that stuff. People will struggle to live. People will struggle to feed their children. And if you have children, that's very meaningful to you. And with Native America, you know, the children are the focus of everything. People will do what it takes to feed their children. I don't think that's a manifestation of greed. I think that's an innate concern for group welfare. You know, and as far as we're concerned, the community is just a large family group. I think what Western cultures have forgotten is how to think in the group term, actual concern for the group, the feeling that that group is part of your family, even though Westerners like to call it fictive family and not see the claim as a real family. We actually do, and there's actual concern for one another. So I don't necessarily believe that greed is innate or any other darn thing. I think that's actual creation, and I think people have been convinced to think against their own best interest and accept that that's innate. It's not.
Yeah, and Barbara, where's some of the, is there a website or blog that you have where listeners can follow some of your
work? I don't have a website. I don't have a blog. I consider that kind of thing a big old time suck. I'm trying to do, you know, the work that I'm expected to get done. I mean, expected by elders, expected by spirits, and not just by the people who are employing me. So I'm trying to get all that work done to do the kind of research I do. I just have to pretty much go at it tooth and nail.
Understandable. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. Wendy, you got anything else for Barbara?
No, I just, you know, I'm definitely going to check out more of your work, and people can check that out on the Reality Sandwich website, too, which you were featured on that. Thank you so much, Barbara, for being with us tonight.
Okay, you're welcome.
Great, thanks, Barbara. Have a great weekend.
Okay, thank you.
All right, and with that, we're just going to give you an update on who's joining us. Next week, we have Jonathan Phillips coming on the show for the 11-11-11. He's the co-founder of Evolver.net. His new book is coming out, so he's going to talk about that. We got DJ Scalar coming on the show. We're going to have a Sports City update from New York. And on the 18th, we got Antonio Lopez, Hope McKinney, Robert Akers, and also Long Beach, California Sports City update. And all the way from Australia, on December 2nd, we have Stephanie South and also a Sports City update from Dan, who is also in Australia. And on the 9th, we have Joe Moore, ColtSentinel.com is his website, and an update from Boulder, Colorado. And with that, Wendy, any closing statements to make?
Yeah, I was going to actually close with this. You know, I was writing earlier, and I have a few reasons to get pissed off and make the shift, Jenna, which I know you will appreciate this. But this was my list for the week. DMOs are not just an option, but it's becoming a replacement. Soon it's going to be illegal to have non-GMO and heirloom seeds, thanks to Monsanto. Jobs in our country are scarce. We've outsourced the industry out of the country. We need fair health care. Uncle Sam wants to take away our rights to choose if we should have an option for homeopathic and alternative health care because of the pharmaceutical industry is big business for Wall Street and the government. Does anyone remember we're living on a planet? Respect your mother. The petroleum industry intentionally started oil spills because of dollar bills. Don't get me started on this, then. I could roll off with many other reasons, but people are waking up in this country, and it's about time. And so that's my closing thoughts. I'm live in upstate South Carolina, and, you know, it's even hitting smaller towns, so people are definitely waking up.
And that's what's up. And with that, remember, Revolver Planet Radio is brought to you in part by Elexilay.com, who we had on earlier. And that's the new interactive Flower of Life board game. And with that, Evolver Planet, one love. We will speak to you all next week and listen to a little more of Richard Ganaway's AO Music.